Spirit Catholic Radio, inviting you to encounter Jesus.
Prepare the way, overcoming obstacles to God, the gospel, and the church. We are going to outline that book in a five-part series. For you here on Spirit Mornings on the Spirit Catholic Radio Network, I'm Jen Brown along with Bruce McGregor, and we have with us Carlo Broussard. He's staff apologist and speaker at Catholic Answers, and he is the perfect person to help lay this out because he's, in fact, the author of that very book. Good morning, Carlo.
Hey, good morning, Bruce and Jen. How are you?
We're doing very well, Carlo, and as always, we're looking forward to a wonderful discussion and series with you, which we guarantee people will get something out of.
Same here, brother. I'm always blessed and honored to be on the air with you guys.
So we talked about, when we were talking with you about the book, there were some wonderful ways that it lays it out, and you thought it'd be a great idea if we divide those ways up, because, like the book does, and is it divided into five different ways?
Sure, yeah, five sections. So section one is prepare the way for truth. Section two, prepare the way for God. Then we move to section three, prepare the way for Jesus, looking at Jesus, his divinity, can we trust the Gospels, etc. Then prepare the way for Christianity, looking at Christianity as a religion as a whole and addressing certain obstacles skeptics and unbelievers may have to Christianity as a religion. And then finally in section five, prepare the way for church, dealing with certain roadblocks or obstacles that unbelievers face when it comes to Catholicism.
So, Carlo, let's start out with a description of a word that's going to be key in our discussion today, and that's relativism. What is that?
Yes. Yeah, well, relativism is a philosophical worldview that states there is no objective truth. There's no absolute truth. In other words, there's no truth independent of what you or I happen to think. So what might be true for me might not be true for you. So your truth, my truth. Truth is truth takes effect when a belief is coherent or coheres with a certain, or something coheres with my set of values, with my set of beliefs, which might be different than it cohering with your belief system. So there's no absolute truth, but truth is merely relative, dependent on what you or I happen to think or a group of individuals happens to think.
And this is extremely dangerous because if we're all living our own truths, so I live my truth, you, Carlo, live your truth, Bruce
Correct.
Lives his truth, then at some certain point in time, laws have to be just tossed out.
Right. Yeah, because what's going to happen is your belief system is going to eventually conflict with my belief system. Then we have to ask the question, well, whose belief system wins out and ultimately reduces to the one who has more power to override and to physically coerce the other person into conceding or to obeying that which I believe to be true. So it reduces to might makes right. The danger of relativism, besides the fact that it's logically incoherent, right? Because to say there is no absolute truth is, in essence, to say it's absolutely true that there is no absolute truth, which is absurd because it violates the principle of non-contradiction. Something cannot both be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time. And that's one of the strategies I point out in the first chapter in the book to show how relativism is self-refuting, is self-referentially incoherent. The relativist is basically pulling the rug out from underneath his feet. But the danger involved in that is that, as you pointed out, Bruce and Jen, is that it reduces all beliefs, including the belief of relativism, to mere personal taste or preference, which has no more bearing on reality than one's personal taste or preference of chocolate ice cream over vanilla ice cream. And this is across the board, whether you're saying 2 + 2 = 4, or whether it applies to morality, right? And that's where the danger lies, because when it applies to morality, you're saying that all moral beliefs are reduced to mere personal taste or preference, which makes all morality trivial, makes all morality a mere illusion. And so fundamentally, when you ask the question, well, whose morality is going to win out, it's going to be the one in power. So it reduces to might makes right. So this is not just a slippery slope argument. This is a logical consequence of the belief itself, inhering in the belief of relativism applied to truth in general, as well as moral truth, logically leads to having no standard of recourse, nothing to look to in order to settle disputes and conflicts, in order to get along as social animals, as Aristotle would say, as rational animals living in society. So relativism not only is logically absurd, it's actually abhorrent because it leads to such absurdities when it comes to morality and how to live in peaceful harmony as human beings. Rather than relativism, and here's another point I bring out in the book, Bruce and Jen, and this logically follows. Rather than relativism upholding and promoting tolerance, relativism actually undermines tolerance. You know, because for so many people, you know, it's all about tolerance, right? It's all about tolerance. And relativism is a more tolerant worldview because we accept everybody's opinions as equal and valid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when somebody has an intolerant worldview? What happens when, for that person for whom intolerance is a good thing relative to their belief system? So let's say a particular individual thinks it's good for him and his group of individuals, his society, to physically coerce someone into believing what they believe and persuasion by the sword. Well, in the mental framework of relativism, we could not criticize that belief because it's true for them. So rather than relativism promoting tolerance, it actually undermines tolerance and in fact promotes unjust intolerance, you see? So these are some of the strategies that I coach you in how to employ in removing the obstacle of relativism, removing this obstacle of, well, I don't want to say anything's true because that's being intolerant. No, contraire.
It's 7:17, Spirit Mornings on the Spirit Catholic Radio Network. I'm Jen Brown along with Bruce McGregor. And we are talking with Carlo Broussard. He's a staff apologist at Catholic Answers. And the book is called Prepare the Way. And we're going to go through this book in a five-part series. This is part number one, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And we're talking about relativism. And Carlo, can you explain once again for the listener that how just in simply the explanation of relativism, they pull the rug out from under themselves in the mere explanation?
Yes, very good point, Jen, because I mentioned it in passing, and sometimes here's one of those things that it's so clear, right? It's so bright, it's so clear, because we're talking about first principles of human knowledge. We tend not to get it when we first hear it. It's like the owl, you know, looking in the sun. The sun's so bright and so there, the owl can't see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me explain it. So think about this. Relativism states there is no absolute truth. So if somebody makes that statement, Bruce and Jen, I would simply respond and ask them the question, is that absolutely true? And in order to hold to their argument of relativism, they have to say yes. And if they say yes, it's absolutely true that there is no absolute truth, then you violate the principle of non-contradiction, the first principle of human reason. So it's self-referentially incoherent, it's self-refuting.
That's just powerful stuff in the description of relativism to tell somebody, well, then how do you uphold that?
That's right. You cannot uphold it because it's not grounded in reason. It violates the fundamental ground of reason, the principle of non-contradiction.
Right. Well, let's take a topic here, circle back. We talked about tolerance or intolerance, Carlo, a little bit. And maybe some ways that you're putting forward here to respond to someone who says we're being intolerant by saying that their belief is wrong.
That's right. Well, one of the strategies I employ is that, you know, when somebody slaps this label of intolerance on us, Bruce and Jen, one of the things, you know, and what they'll say is, well, for us to say somebody else is wrong, to say I'm right and somebody else is wrong, you're being intolerant. And, well, first of all, they're not distinguishing between just and unjust intolerance, right? I mean, we don't tolerate blind people driving, right? That's a just intolerance. You know, you're not going to tolerate a blind people driving on the road. Why? Because that can cause a lot of harm. So there is something to be said for distinguishing between just and unjust intolerance, and people who slap the label of intolerance on us for making truth claims do not make those distinctions. But besides that point, these folks fail to realize that they are not applying their very own principle to themselves. Because think about this, Bruce and Jenner. Bruce and Jim. That was a slip of the tongue there. Think about this. Whenever someone says, Carlo, you're being intolerant for saying somebody else is wrong, I would simply ask that person and say, okay, am I wrong for saying somebody else is wrong? I mean, are you telling me that I should not tell somebody else is wrong? Somebody else's belief is wrong? And they would have to say yes in order to hold to their argument. And then so I would simply respond and say, well, wait a minute. Why am I being intolerant for saying somebody else's belief is wrong, but yet you're not being intolerant for saying I'm wrong for saying somebody else is wrong? So do you see how the individual fails to apply the principle of intolerance to themselves? So it's a double standard. So once again, they're saying I'm being intolerant for saying a belief is wrong, but yet in saying that, in making that statement, they're basically saying I'm wrong for saying somebody else is wrong, and thus they would be intolerant according to their own principle. So that's one of the strategies I bring out in the book.
It's 7:22 Spirit Mornings on the Spirit Catholic Radio Network. We're talking with Carlo Broussard, and in the recent Supreme Court case and the cake baker, the masterpiece cake baker, from what I understand, the individuals went out of their way, like drove extra miles past other bakeries and went out of their way to go to this particular bakery, I believe, so that the case could come forward, right? So nothing says my beliefs are being violated like going out of your way to violate other people's beliefs.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing. The argument for so-called same-sex marriage and legalizing and socially accepting the practice of same-sex sexual activity, etc., the common narrative was, this is not going to affect anybody. Just let these people be, right? It's not harming anyone. It's not going to affect anybody. But we have seen that that is not the case. That in all throughout, from the bakery owners to the photographers to our social living itself and the laws we're making, the push for same-sex sexual activity has indeed had an effect on other people outside of those couples who are seeking legal recognition of their union as a quote-unquote marriage. So fundamentally, all of this is just a smokescreen, Bruce and Jen, for the root of the problem. Is such activity right or wrong? And that presupposes the more fundamental truth, is there an objective right or wrong that we can come to know? You see, that's where the rub is. Can we come to know objective right and wrong? And the answer is yes. We look to human nature and the order of good inscribed in human nature, given, you know, what our powers are for, et cetera, in this particular case, our sexual powers. And then we have to, once we establish that, there is objective right and wrong, and then we have to establish what is that objective right and wrong, given the sexual arena and our sexual powers. Then from there, we're able to make certain laws on governing, you know, what is appropriate and what is good with regard to our sexual powers. So all of this stuff, all of these arguments that are being made, and the push for so-called same-sex marriage and the legalization of same-sex sexual activity, it's all a smokescreen because it's failing to consider the more fundamental questions about the truth of right and wrong, about the truth of our human sexuality and the nature thereof, and what is good for us concerning our human sexuality. So this recent case definitely ties into this topic of relativism, truth, and moral truth.
Yeah. The interesting thing in this case, too, I think, Carlo, that's been brought forward is the fact that the Colorado Commission that was initially handling this, talk about intolerance, the language that was used against the masterpiece cake baker and everything else, definitely factored into the Supreme Court's decision, you know, with this 7-2 victory, if you will, coming forward for the cake baker. because this Colorado Commission was so intolerant of Christianity, and the remarks that they made and their comments and stuff were just unbelievable.
That's right. That's right. They're failing to apply the principle to themselves, because we can very as simple as asking them the question, well, why don't you tolerate our Christian belief, you see? And so they toot the horn of tolerance, but only for those beliefs that cohere with what they believe, you see? And they are being intolerant of everything that goes outside the boundaries of their particular belief system of promoting same-sex sexual activity. So anything outside of those boundaries, they're being intolerant of and only tolerating that which falls within the boundaries of their belief system. So once again, a double standard, failing to apply their principle, the perceived principle of intolerance to themselves. And it's important for us to point out this inconsistency. And for this reason, Bruce and Jen, in order that we as Christians don't feel bad for standing up for our belief and defending what is true, what is good, and what is beautiful, we do not have to fear the label of intolerance as if we're being mean-spirited or something. There are some cases where it calls for just intolerance. And when it comes to violating the very beauty and dignity of our human sexuality, that is one thing we cannot tolerate, whether within the mind and intellectual discourse and saying, no, this is wrong, this is morally wrong, and even within making laws, that we cannot tolerate such violations of that which is most sacred about us as human beings, our human sexuality, not only coming from our animal nature, but imbued with rationality. And that gets back to our whole ordering of our human sexuality, both to procreation and unitive love. And because it belongs to our nature as human beings, to violate that aspect of our humanity, Bruce and Jen, is to violate the dignity of the human being. And that's something that we have to proclaim from the rooftops.
728, Carlo Broussard with us this morning with Catholic Answers. The book is called Prepare the Way, and we're talking about the first part of the book, Truth. So, Carlo, with so many different people thinking so many different things, what do we say if someone doesn't think truth exists because of this fact?
Yes, that's a major obstacle that people face. You know, I mean, look, all these people believe so many different things. Objective truth cannot possibly exist. And here's their rationale. Because if objective truth existed, well, then we would have a common consensus. Everybody would believe it. So here's how we can respond. In strategy one in this particular chapter, I point out how this commits in what we call in logic a fallacy of the non sequitur fallacy. Non sequitur is just Latin for it doesn't follow. The conclusion, there is no absolute truth, doesn't follow from the premise, people believe so many different things, right? So here's just a classic example. Let's say, Bruce and Jen, you guys say the earth is spherical. Let's say I say the earth is flat, all right? And we would have a disagreement. We would have a differing of opinions, right? Well, it doesn't necessarily follow from that different belief or those different beliefs that there is no objective truth about the shape of the earth.
Correct.
Just because we disagree doesn't mean there is no objective truth about the shape of the earth. Because
the
if there
earth
were
is
no
still
objective
round.
Truth about the shape of the earth, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the earth is still round. So just because people differ in their beliefs, it doesn't necessarily follow that there is no objective truth. And the second strategy that I employ is that it commits another fallacy. It's begging the question. It's assuming what it's trying to prove. Because it's trying to prove that, well, you know, truth is relative. Truth is dependent upon what you or the group of individuals agrees upon, right? But notice that in this objection, it's saying, if objective truth existed, well, then everybody would believe it, right? Well, the underlying assumption is that in order to have objective truth, you got to have universal agreement. Everybody's got to agree on it, right? But here's the problem. If objective truth existed, it wouldn't matter what people agree upon or not. whether people agree on it or not wouldn't matter because truth is objective. So it's assuming what it's trying to prove, namely that people need to agree on things in order for something to be true. But that's the essence of relativism. So this argument is basically saying relativism is the appropriate worldview to embrace because of relativism. But that's absurd. That doesn't make sense. So fundamentally, this argument begs the question, or it argues in a circle. You know, it says you got to have universal agreement in order to have objective truth. But universal agreement, well, that's the issue of debate. That's what we're debating about. Because if objective truth existed, it wouldn't matter what people agree on or not.
It's 7:31. Carlo Broussard with us this morning. Staff apologist at Catholic Answers. The book is called Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Truth. And we just took care of part one, the truth. And we will look forward to part two, and I believe that will be God. Is that correct, Carlo?
That is correct, Jim.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning. God bless.
Bless you both.
That will be on spiritmornings.com before noon today if anybody would like to listen to that once again. And we look forward to talking with you again real soon, Carlo.
Thank you all both. God bless you.
All right. God bless you too, Carlo Broussard.